Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Good morning, I'm Bobby Kerr. This is Down to Business. And all week long, I've been in Toronto for the EY Entrepreneur of the Year annual CEO retreat. Over the next 2 hours, you're going to be hearing from the likes of Colonel Chris Hadfield, former Irish international and now Canadian resident Kevin Kilbane, as well as two of the stars of Canada's Dragon's Den. Plus, we'll be hearing about business life here in Canada and talking to some of the finalists in the EY Entrepreneur of the Year. Now, let's get down to it. I'm here in Toronto, in Canada. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the show Goldie Hyder. He's the President and CEO of the Business Council of Canada. How are you, Goldie?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
Okay, Goldie, you represent business. There's been a lot happening in the world lately, and you're acutely aware of where Canada is placed. Can you maybe set the scene for us?
Sure.
A lot has happened in the last, God, things are changing every day. But, you know, if we look at about the last 12, 18 months, and what's happened with your nearest neighbour mainly, and the impact it's had on society, on business, mm-hmm. on politics, and all those things. Can you just give us maybe your high-level take
sure.
on where we're at?
It's a big question. Let me see if I can take a crack at it. And look, what is business love? Business loves certainty. And what do we have? Uncertainty. What is the only certain thing we have? Uncertainty.
Sure.
And so in that backdrop, businesses are trying to navigate the decisions that they need to make to deploy capital and to bring in shareholder return. When the United States changes, the rest of us have to pay attention to how it's changing and what implications that has on us. A little harder for you in that you have a pond between us, but a little, you know, it's for us, it's every day. We see sure. it and we feel it every day. What are we seeing? What are we doing about it? America for some time now has been suggesting that it's trying to withdraw from the world. It wants to pull back. It wants to retrench and retreat. You know, history shows that they didn't want to be in the world war. They were brought in, right? So they've been trying to do that. And it's not a Republican or Democrat thing. It's an American thing. They are not keen on being the policeman of the world. They want to be able to focus on their own interests and their own economy. And in some ways, the so-called Dunro Doctrine, as it was dubbed, is America basically saying, we want to focus on our hemisphere. We want to focus on the Western Hemisphere. We want to take care of our own neighborhood. Well, Canada's in that neighborhood. Mexico's in that neighborhood, sure. as are many other countries. And so a lot of this is now wrapped up in the question of the trading agreement that we're trying to deal with the Americans and the review and renewal of the USMCA. There's a lot of things that are changing, but one of them is not geography. We have 9,000 kilometers of border attached to the United States. And so our government, under the leadership of Prime Minister Carney, is trying to navigate a changing America. What does it mean for Canada? What are the opportunities for Canada? How do we find our place in the world? How do we build an economy that's not beholden and reliant on a single economy?
And I'm right in saying that your trade with the US is 75% of your business. Your trade with Europe is 8%. So if we take those stats alone, you know, business, as you know, it's never great only having one customer.
It's not good. I think a kid with a lemonade stand at the age of seven knows it's not a good idea to just have mom as your customer. But for us, what it means is we're not divorcing the United States of America. We're not departing from the United States of America. We're de-risking our economy. What we're trying to do, like that kid with a lemonade stand, is to say, I need more customers. So it's a U.S. plus strategy. You're not going to run away from the G1 economy. There's no country in the world that wouldn't change places with Canada. What we're saying is some of the things that have held us back, you can't actually blame the Americans for. We want, and we now have a government that's extremely keen on building trade-enabling infrastructure and architecture to get goods out of Canada. Our services company compete, are very present in Ireland, by the way, from management consulting firms to our banks to our insurance companies, sure. our asset managers and others, technology companies, of course. But when you have hard assets that are in demand around the world, oil, gas, potash, uranium, critical minerals, forestry, fisheries, that means you need trade-enabling architecture. So what the government is doing under Prime Minister Carney's leadership is saying, we get it. We're going to make sure that the regulatory framework, that the tax framework, that the talent framework is competitive, that we have the ability to build this infrastructure to get our goods to more customers. Because Canada has 15 trading agreements with 51 countries. We're trying to add Mercosur, ASEAN, and India and others. There's no shortage of customers. What we need to show the world is we're a reliable hub from which to do business.
Finding new partners won't be easy.
No, and as I said, we're not trying to withdraw or reduce. What we're trying to do is add. It's a U.S. plus strategy. And yes, you're absolutely right. You're not going from 75% to 25% in the next 50 years if you try. Because we know, you know from your own geography, trade is determined by geography.
Yeah.
You don't pick the furthest away customer
hence,
to do business with.
Hence, there really will be no, and there has been some speculation of Canada joining Europe, but that's pie in the sky
stuff. I don't think that's really what Canadians are saying. I think what you're seeing from our government certainly is, look, the arrangement that we have, the trading block with CETA, the Canada-European Free Trade Agreement, along with the fact that we're into TPP and others, I think the government is looking at, and the Prime Minister has appointed a very senior representative to go around to say, can we construct a supply chain that has integrity, that has reliability, that has predictability, that inspires confidence for capital to be deployed, that gives us supply chains that are reliable, especially, God forbid, there's ever another pandemic or whatever. That is fair. Secondly, we've been admitted into SAFE, a defense program where Canadian companies can do more and be bidders in procurement. So I see integration in that capacity, so not the idea that we're the 28th entrant into Europe.
But you want capital to build new ports, new airports.
We need a lot of capital.
Infrastructure to realize these assets that you mentioned, fishing, forestry.
The full value of our products.
All those things that you can sell to other people.
Yeah. Well, look, what we want is full value for our products. We've been selling too much of our goods to the United States at a discount. When you suddenly have more customers, and this has been the goal of governments for some time now, but it's in the execution. Make sure that we can reliably deliver our products to different parts of the world so that they can have a country that cares about rule of law, that cares about the environment, that cares about the indigenous, that cares about corporate social responsibility and more.
Finally, can I ask you, how angry are Canadians at the moment?
They're very emotional, with good reason. You know, it's not cool to have the threatening of your very sovereignty that took place. I'm grateful that King Charles has been able to kind of calm those waters with his relationship with the president, reminding him that, hey, they're a Commonwealth country. I'm the King of Canada. That's helped a lot. But we need to, I trust Canadians. We are obviously very emotional about the situation. But as time passes, math is math, geography is geography. The presidency last another 900 days or so, there's going to be a new president. Things will change. We need to recognize that we're fortunate to live in the neighborhood that we do. But listen, they expect our government, and we in business community are aligned with their desire to see our governments do more to help us diversify so that we can get full value for our resources that are in demand around the world and do the kinds of things that we can do with Ireland. Partner, build relationships, have the trade exchanges, have the universities exchanges, work on technology. There's a lot that we can do together and a lot that we can learn from each other.
Goldie Hyder there. He's the president and CEO of the Business Council of Canada, and it's a great scene setter. Thank you for that, Goldie. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me, and I'll be there in June. I look forward to it.
So we're here in the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I'm really, really honored and delighted to welcome to Down to Business Dr. Haley Wickenheiser. She's a four-time Olympic gold medalist, and she's a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame right here in this building. Dr. Haley, so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thanks for having me.
Tell us, firstly, how did you get into playing ice hockey? Tell us about the early days. Climbing the rings and the ladder, all that early stuff.
Yeah, well, in Canada, there's nothing to do in the winter but play hockey pretty much. I grew up in the prairies, which is, I'm from a very small town, 1,800 people. And in our country, it's curling or ice hockey.
Okay.
And so I chose ice hockey and started at the age of 5. And really, the rest is kind of history. And now, the game has come so far in this country. We have professional women's hockey where women are paid a living wage to play the game, which is amazing to see.
Yeah. Which wasn't the case in your early days.
No, I thought it was the only girl in the world playing hockey, actually. All my heroes and role models were men's hockey players, so it's come a long way.
So tell us then about, you've got 7 world championships. Bring us back maybe to the first one.
Yeah.
The first one that you won, mm-hmm. and you said, you know, maybe I'm doing something good here. Maybe I've arrived.
Yeah, well, my first one, 94, I was 15 years old in Lake Placid, New York, when we beat the Americans on their home soil, which is always a fun thing to do. And, you know, we went on to have pretty good success through the next 20 years that I played, and you know, a few gold medals and world championships, and really Canada dominated the early stages of women's hockey in those first 10-15 years I played, and now the balance is pretty even and sort of shifted to the U.S. Coming on strong. So it's the rest of the world is catching up with Sweden and Finland and Switzerland, but it's been fun.
When we talk about the world championships, the 7 that you won, mm-hmm. tell me then about the Olympics. How does that compare relative again? As someone who comes from maybe a non-hockey.
Yeah.
So are the Olympics a bigger deal than the World Championships?
Yeah, the Olympics is our Stanley Cup, I guess our Ryder Cup, you know.
Sure.
That's the thing that every female hockey player aspires to win. It's a little bit higher than a World Championship, and it is, you know, on the world stage and kind of the Holy Grail, the Stanley Cup.
And also then you're open to people who may not watch the game.
That's it.
A much wider audience on a worldwide stage, as you say.
Yeah, we usually find registration for hockey goes up by 100% after an Olympics in Canada.
No way.
Yeah.
Now, you won 4 Olympic gold medals.
Yeah.
6 Olympic medals overall, is that right?
Yeah, 5 Olympic medals, 6 Olympics.
Right.
I played 1 Summer Olympics. I played softball. We didn't medal there, but hockey, 4 gold, 1 silver, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, tell me then, you're also a medical doctor, is that right?
Yes, that's correct,
So how did you do all that in parallel with these great sporting achievements?
Well, you know, I had my eye on medicine early in my hockey career, and I grew up wanting to do 2 things, win a Stanley Cup and play for the Edmonton Oilers, and the second thing was to be a doctor. And so when one career finished, I parlayed myself into another, which is emergency medicine, and just a lot of lack of sleep and potentially somewhat crazy, but I was able to get through it, and now I'm still doing both, but in a different way.
Yeah. So you're training now, is that right, as well as practicing in emergency medicine?
Yeah, so right now I practice emergency medicine, and I work as an assistant general manager for the Toronto Maple Leafs NHL hockey team here in Toronto. So two pretty big jobs, but they complement each other. A lot of pressure, a lot of decisions, and what I found I was as a player has really helped me in emergency medicine.
Okay.
Yeah.
And any parallels in terms of your own career? You know, the highs, the lows, the euphoric days, the disappointing days with that and business.
For sure. I mean, I think it's all the same. You know, some of the greatest advice I got when I was about 18 years old was from an NHL coach named Daryl Sutter. And he said, you know, you're going to have a long career in this game, but it's a roller coaster. Just don't get on it. And so, you know, I think that's the same in business. You have highs and lows, you win and you lose, and you just try to stay even and not... You know, when it goes well, you're never as good as you think. And when it doesn't go well, you're never as bad as you think, is at least I thought as an athlete. And so I think that's a lot of parallels for business as well.
So what next for Dr. Haley Wickenheiser then?
I'm just going to just keep plugging away, doing my medicine hockey combo here. And hopefully we'll try to bring a Stanley Cup to Toronto for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Okay, that would be a big deal.
That would be huge. The city would be shut down.
Okay. Yeah. Have you any connections with Ireland? Any family relations, anything like that?
Well, you know what? Yes, the best defenseman Canada has ever produced in hockey is a woman by the name of Geraldine Heaney.
No way.
And Geraldine has very close family connections, and through her career was back and forth to Ireland many times. And I've never seen anyone who could drink Guinness like Geraldine Heaney.
Our type of girl. There you go.
There you go.
Well, Dr. Haley Wickenheiser, thank you so much for joining us. You're a legend in these parts.
Yep. Thank you, Bobby.
And it's our honor and privilege to meet you here today in your own Hall of Fame. So well done and thank you.
Thank you and welcome. Thank
Cheers.
You very much.
That was Dr. Haley Wickenheiser, 4-time Olympic gold medalist and member of the Hockey Hall of Fame there. Now I'm here in Toronto for the EY Entrepreneur of the Year annual CEO retreat. As part of the retreat, I'm also catching up with some of this year's finalists and chatting through some of the opportunities and challenges facing these bright entrepreneurs. A number of this year's finalists are in the medical and personalized care space. I'm joined here in Toronto by Brian Shields. He's of Neurange Medical. Dr. Harriet Tracy of Beyond BMI also joins us, as does Danny Buckley of ADHD Now. Harriet, we might start with you. Tell us about your business.
Thanks for having us on, Bobby. So my name is Dr. Harriet Tracy, founder of Beyond BMI. And Bobby, what Beyond BMI is essentially an online weight management clinic. But we do things a little bit differently. So instead of just giving people a script and kind of a one-off piece of care, we actually wrap it around with full support. So what that looks like is people come to us, they're looking to manage their weight, they've been told to eat less and move more. And what we do is we give them access to the best therapeutic options, things like GLP-1 medications, you've heard about them, Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, but we do it wrapped around with multidisciplinary care, doctors, dietitians, coaches, nurses, a full wraparound team of care.
So it's a personalised programme to lose weight that is focused on the individual's needs.
Absolutely, and I use the word weight loss because it's the word that we're all familiar with. Really what it actually is obesity management.
Right.
And what makes that different, Bobby, is the fact that obesity management is a medical term. Weight loss can get itself locked up in kind of wellness areas and optimization spaces, but this really is a disease. We're talking about something that is affecting 1 in 3 people in this population, costing the same as building the children's hospital every single year. And not only that, it is causing significant kind of illness to people, which, you know, it needs to be treated in a long-term way.
Great. Thank you for that introduction, Harriet. Stay with us. I want to introduce Danny Buckley. He's of ADHD Now. Danny, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, Bobby. Thanks a million for having me on.
Lovely to have you. And tell us your story, if you would.
Yeah, so my name is Danny Buckley. My company is ADHD Now, so I have ADHD myself. And I suppose I found the bottlenecks of getting access into ADHD services in Ireland. It was really exhausting, you know, a large public waiting list. And at the time, there was nobody doing it online. So I felt after getting access to clinicians, you know, during COVID, myself, for my own medical condition, that I'd be able to start ADHD Now to allow people access into the service. Why the name ADHD Now? Instead of waiting months or years, you can access a clinician within 7 days. So we carry out ADHD assessments, but similar to Harriet, aftercare as well, so therapy, psychiatry services, coaching. Like, really for myself, by getting a diagnosis was an opportunity to understand how my brain works, and then so the aftercare is really important, and it's gone very well. You know, people are looking for access, you know, they're tired of being on waiting lists, and they see the importance of early intervention. I wasn't diagnosed until I was 32, and I can say that I had a lot of pain up until then, a lot of struggles, emotional dysregulation, which affected me in my life. And when I did get that medical intervention, and then I was able to structure my life, build a bit of discipline, a bit of awareness. It really helped me. So then I said, let's try and help and create an option for people to come through our service privately, with the vision of eventually strengthening the public system.
Great job. Well done. Okay, that's wonderful to hear, Danny. Stay with us, because our third guest is Brian Shields. Now, tell us all about your business, if you would.
So our business is Neurant Medical. It's a medical device business based in Oranmore in County Galway. The device we've designed and manufacture is to treat a disease called rhinitis, which is a chronic inflammation of the nasal tissues. So the symptoms you'd feel with this disease are chronic congestion, so you can't breathe through your nose, or chronic runny nose out the front, post-nasal drip, chronic cough, normally huge disruption in your sleep, so a lot of tiredness. It exists probably 1 in 4 is the best data we have, so very, very, very big need. We first saw it in a innovation program we were on in Galway called Bioinnovate Ireland, which is where we shadowed ENT surgeons for months to see what the big unmet need was in their world.
Right.
And then try and solve for that. So this is what we saw pretty soon out of the blocks. This was very obvious.
Interesting, very interesting. And as somebody who's had an ENT man myself, Dr. Con Timon, many years ago, it's a fascinating area. Is this a device, or is it maybe explain the actual device, if it is a device?
It is a device indeed, right. Yeah. So it's a device that enables a procedure by an ENT surgeon. So the device itself is a radio frequency energy device.
Okay.
So this is put into the nose by an ENT surgeon under local anesthetic usually, so the patient's awake. They put the device right at the very back of the nose, at the base of the skull, and they knock out a nerve at the back of the nose that's responsible for this inflammation, right? It's a hyperactive nerve. So we knock out that with a little bit of energy. Patient's able to walk away 20 minutes later, half an hour later, get up from the chair, walk out, return to daily activities, and they should see good effects within days and last for years.
How did you happen upon this, or what brought you to this?
I was a management consultant prior to getting into this, but joined this innovation fellowship program, which is where it all started. And as is typical in Ireland, I knew somebody there. It was a friend of mine that had done the program before me.
Right.
And he was fascinated by it, told a fascinating story. And I thought, let's jump into this with both feet.
Great. Harriet, back to you if we can. Are people keen to take their health more into their own hands now?
Yeah, I think people are a lot more educated than they were many moons ago. I think the age of the doctor on a pedestal is well and truly over, and rightly so. I think people are coming to the doctor now much more informed. There's great access to information. But with great access to information comes a lot of confusion.
Yeah,
and
there's noise. And there's a downside of too much information.
Absolutely, and that's where I think you've hit the nail on the head. You know, trust becomes then the differentiating factor.
Sure.
So can you find access to trusted healthcare professionals, trusted services who are going to help you make sense of that information and I suppose separate the signal from the noise?
Danny, in terms of the legislation, it sounded from your own personal experience that you had to go through walls of bureaucracy to get even your basic needs addressed.
Yeah, it is at the moment, Bobby. It's the access barrier is there. And I feel since COVID, there's been a huge demand on mental health services, neurodiverse services, ADHD, autism assessments. And I believe even though there's been attempts to increase funding, it's still very underfunded. Processes and systems need to be built. It needs to be digitalized. And every child deserves the right to have a pathway forward and not be on a waiting list for years. So that's my vision, really, to create change.
And what have you seen on your journey so far in terms of that either getting better or worse?
Yeah, it's definitely getting better, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we're definitely moving in the right direction. I think, you know, especially government have acknowledged that it is an area, there's a mental health act, a new mental health act, which is supportive of that. So I really believe we're going in the right direction, but it needs further resources, needs more funding, it needs digitalization. We're at an age of, you see what's going on over here, what we see, how Canada are out in front. We're looking at the next 1,000 days. We need to do that in Ireland as well. In healthcare, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And just taking on from what Harriet said there around too much information, people Googling things, people getting maybe misinformed. Is that a problem in your area?
Yeah, well, it's medical intervention is the first part of any neurodiversity or mental health challenge. You need medical intervention, and that's the barrier. That's the barrier that that's the barrier that's up. So we need to create pathways, quicker pathways for that medical intervention to inform people and then give them programs for living, like in Harriet's business or my business, you know.
Brian, tell us again about the condition.
Rhinitis.
Rhinitis.
You walk into a GP or an ENT, they'll know very much about rhinitis. I think it's probably the nomenclature we mightn't have. So everyone knows block nose and runny nose, right? And people might more commonly associate it with allergy. The allergic component is one area of rhinitis.
Okay.
So this has been well documented for many, many, many years. What's new here is the nerve that drives this in the back of the nose that we have latched onto. That's new, fairly new in the medical world. It's come from a deeper set nerve that they actually were operating on since the late 60s with dramatic side effects. So it has been a growing knowledge in the space, but surprisingly to us, the anatomy very poorly understood.
How long did it take you from start to finish to get to where you are now?
So we were on the program, the BioInnovate program, where the genesis of all of this back in 2014.
14,
right.
Wow.
So now we have our third generation product launch last summer. So we have gone through that FDA regulation in the States three times now.
Right.
But in the meantime, we have taken big steps in the business, like establishing our own manufacturing plant, so our own clean room for manufacturing in Oranmore in Galway. That was an important step for us as we look to scale properly in the US.
And the West of Ireland is known, is it not, for expertise around medical devices. Has that been helpful?
We have the cleverest people in the room at all times.
Yeah,
it has been. I don't think we could have done it anywhere else.
Yeah. And isn't it also interesting then, if you talk about any product, you make improvements as you get feedback, as you trial, and then you're probably never there.
You're always listening, that's for sure. And we knew that we were always going to get feedback from this. So we've treated 15,000 patients to date. So it's a lot of feedback. Salespeople, engineers are always in the field, always seeking feedback on what we could do better.
Great. Now, before we let you go, can you tell us about the CEO retreat? We're here in Toronto. We've had a wonderful week. How has the experience been for you?
I think mind-blowing is probably understating what it has been. Not just the speakers that we've been exposed to, but the people in the room are just phenomenal business people in Ireland. And what was probably most moving for me was that they're all very interested in our story as newbies into this world. They all want to hear our story, both our personal story, our business story, and see where they can help.
Yeah,
so it's
great.
Been very, very humbling.
Let me ask the same question to Danny. Your experience this week, Danny?
Oh, it's been amazing, Bobby. It's like I described it yesterday as like the Disneyland for business people, you know. It's been amazing and just highlighted, I suppose, the backbone of the Irish economy, some exceptional people in there.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful to be within that company. Like, you know, I would have never thought I'd be anywhere near here a few years ago until I actually got access to that medical care myself. And I know I'm able to help others, so it's a great purposeful mission for me. So.
And you've enjoyed it, I take it.
Oh, I've enjoyed it immensely,
And
just thanks to EY as well, and you know everybody that's put in the effort. It's been amazing. Like
Harriet?
I think Brian and Danny said it really well. It's beyond what we could have expected it to be. I think for me, it's the energy. The energy in the room, and it speaks to what it takes to be an entrepreneur. You know, these people have energy levels like I've never seen it before. It's no wonder why there's serial entrepreneurs here, people who've done multiple businesses, and I think that's hugely inspirational for people like us. And also they say good design is invisible. The retreat is so well organized. I mean, EY have absolutely knocked it out of the park. It's incredible.
And energy is infectious, to use a medical term.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad you're all enthused and bouncing from one gig to the next. So I just want to thank my guests again, Brian Shields from Neurant Medical, Dr. Harriet Tracy from Beyond BMI, and Danny Buckley of ADHD Now. Thank you all very much. Some of this year's finalists there in this year's EY Entrepreneur of the Year. We're here in Toronto for the annual CEO retreat. Up next, I come face to face with two Canadian dragons. And I'm delighted to welcome to the show somebody who I might have something a little in common with, Mr. Jay Klein. He's the founder and CEO of The Pure Company, a company that makes chewing gum, sustainable chewing gum, and has really built a brand. Jay, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to do this, and it's great to do this on our home court, you know? But I have to come to Ireland next time.
Now, you say you're a man from humble beginnings. You started off with $1,000, and you built this business over 15-odd years. Tell us about the early days. You were the fellow who sold sweets in the schoolyard. You were the guy who was always sort of hustling and trading. So you were always going to be in business to some degree.
Yeah, I loved the transaction. I loved selling something and turning a product into money. And what I kept with me from day one that I still have today is the work ethic. If you work hard and you outwork your competition, automatically you have a better opportunity to succeed. The market still needs to validate what you're doing, no matter what your product is. And for us, it's chewing gum. It's a simple product that freshens your breath. We take the artificial ingredients out of it, and it's great for everyone to consume. And that's how we connect with so many consumers all over the world.
Tell me about the running for mayor strategy.
So running for mayor is about shaking hands and kissing babies. And our world is getting gum into people's hands. And when you're starting a brand, it really takes a lot of legwork. We gave gum to everyone who we could see. And you know, part of my startup days was walking up and down an airplane as I was going from trade show to trade show. It's a very captive audience. People have nowhere to go. And I would offer gum to consumers sitting in their seats, and they had nothing to do but give me feedback for the whole flight. So it was a very great way to hear what consumers had to say about your products.
So you were also, were you not, building the business conservatively, let's say. So you weren't dealing with major retailers. You were dealing with store owners that you might have known by name. You were visiting stores.
Yeah, it was very humble beginnings. And really, I didn't understand value creation. I understood making money. So I needed to sell products to make money in order to pay for my rent and pay for my life. And that was my trick over the years of just building a business that makes money. And you know, a lot of people today are worried about value, value, value. But at the end of the day, if you're losing money or you're borrowing, it's hard to kind of crest and get to a business that kicks off free cash flow.
Now, we've got a business now today with a turnover of 250 odd million. You're right across the world in many different markets. Let me talk a bit about the Dragon's Den, but in the middle, you're a self-declared marketing and advertising guy. So how much of going on Dragon's Den was about seeking investment, and how much of it was, this is a good marketing and advertising opportunity?
You know,
now, bear in mind, you're talking to somebody who might know a bit about this.
I'm talking to a pro, a professional dragon. I just hope you're not breathing too much fire on my microphone. I think that when you're going on the show, every entrepreneur thinks they need money at the moment. And what you really need is the gateway to success. And everyone's gateway is a little bit different. Money helps you a little bit. Connections help you a little bit more. And if you can get the connections and the doors open for you, maybe you continue to bootstrap it one more turn to allow yourself to scale to the next level so that you can build your business. And with us, it was, how do you get, as an emerging brand, national awareness? How do you get in front of so many consumers? But more importantly, when you validate your idea and you pressure test it against seasoned entrepreneurs or dragons like yourself, that's how you know the good feedback is going to help push you to the next level of your business.
So you say, you told us earlier that you still retain 100% equity in your business.
That's correct.
This is the bit I'm trying to work out. So if you were successful on Dragon's Den, how come you didn't have to give away some equity?
Well, I think being successful on Dragon's Den is having your idea validated by the dragons. That gives the consumers watching the show.
That means they didn't invest.
It means we didn't necessarily need the money at the time.
See, you're a marketing and advertising guy.
You got to spin these things a little bit. But the reality is, how do you get in front as a startup brand? And then there is a show that has made entrepreneurialism so amazing. That is the ticket to elevating your brand at a fast rate.
So the business has been hugely successful, and then your own pitch on Dragon's Den, which was obviously very entertaining, you then participate then as a dragon. So what's the poacher come gamekeeper experience been like?
So sitting in the chair and being able to connect with a pitcher who is as nervous, as vulnerable, and excited to pitch the dragon, I could see myself in their shoes. I knew what it was like to do that. And also, because we're still early on into our career, you're a little bit closer to what the day-to-day needs are in the business. And you know, I often make the analogy, if you went to Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos and asked for business advice, it would be so far away from the real advice that you need to ask your business to, you know, grow tomorrow. And the Dragon's Den connected me with a pitcher in a way that allowed me to be relatable. I understood the stage of their business and I understood what we did to get to the next stage. And that's why our shows were incredibly engaging because we connected so well with the pitchers.
All right, so what's next then for the Pure Company and the chewing gum business? You talk about the fresh breath market. So clearly there are other products in that are beyond chewing gum. Is it about selling more chewing gum?
Well, the fresh breath market is we want to continue to grow and disrupt and bring lapsed consumers back into the category. So the chewing gum market is going to grow by about $8 billion over the next 6 years. And today in North America, we are leading the charge. We're growing the category at over
40%. It's still a growing market, is it?
Still growing.
Right.
Okay. People are coming back to the chewing gum category because now they can consume something like pure gum with no artificial sweeteners, no artificial dyes and colors, and feel good about what they're consuming. So we continue to run for mayor in many different geographies, like Ireland.
I tell you what, just keep running for mayor. Don't run for president.
I understand after the Dragon's Den, you're going to prime minister or president?
President. Three of them decided that was a good idea.
So is that like...
Thankfully, there was one sensible one.
So is the zoo animals going into the real zoo, or how does it work with the politicians?
Come over to Ireland and I'll show you.
Well, so we sell on Amazon in Ireland, and this was a way that we wanted to connect with consumers real quick in real time. And this has been a platform that Pure has been on, and we continue to drive. I think we're number one in the category in Ireland right now on chewing gum, and we're just excited to continue growing the business.
Not to use a pun, but you're a breath of fresh air.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really, really nice to meet you.
Thank you.
And it's great to welcome to the show Arlene Dickinson. She's a dragon at CBC's Dragon's Den. She's a general partner of District Ventures Capital, and she's also a best-selling author. Arlene, I feel I know you already. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. As I understand it, you were South African originally. Tell us about your journey, if you would.
Yeah, South African. My family immigrated over to Canada when I was 3 years old. We had $50 and three suitcases with all of our belongings in them.
Wow.
And we came here, and my dad kind of said, hey, Canada is a miracle for us to be here, and we're going to make the best of it. And he built a life here with my mom, and we grew up here.
So was that in Toronto?
No, we came. We ended up in Edmonton originally, and then in Calgary. So almost all my adult life, I lived in Calgary, and now I live in Toronto and Vancouver.
Okay, very cool. Tell me then about your business journey. Where did you start off?
So I started off my first real career was in marketing. Started off in a little marketing company called Venture Communications. Worked there for a number of years and then eventually bought my partners out. I had two partners who were older than I was, and I had these big dreams and ambitions and decided that I wanted to carry on, and they wanted to retire, and they didn't get along that well. So they were always fighting. I just wanted out of the fight. And so ended up, when they exited, I ended up buying the business and funding it literally myself because I couldn't get any capital from the banks at the time.
Okay.
I was a woman entrepreneur and, I was a single solo entrepreneur, so they didn't like that too much.
And how many people were employed in the business at that
stage?
When
I first started, the business had six people. By the time I bought it, we were around 25 or 26 people.
Okay. So then that journey then you bought some other businesses. And how did you then arrive on the CBC's Dragon's Den.
So CBC, I was busy running the company, doing my thing, and CBC called me and said, we'd like you to audition for the show. And I went, really? And I thought, no, I don't want to be on television. I did not want to be on TV because I didn't want to be judged for my appearance or my age. At the time, I was 49 years old, and I thought, oh, I'm too old for TV. It's funny how we think that now. I'm 69, and I think I was just a kid back then. But it was a call to come and audition, and I did. And they asked me to do the show, and I thought, I'll do it because it's never going to last more than a season. I thought I'd try it for a year, and then 18 seasons later.
Yeah, wow, that's great. Your interaction then with all, and again, I speak from a place, I suppose, that haven't been on the Irish version. Your antenna for BS, let's call it. How good is that? How quickly can you spot somebody coming in with a pitch and that you say, do you know what, straight away, I'm not going there?
You know what, it's funny this season, because we're in the middle of taping right now for season 21, and a couple of the dragons and I were talking, and one of the dragons said to me, you know, you always can pick out the person who's not telling the truth.
Sure.
And she said, you've got this great ability to see, you know, see when people are BSing us. And I take that as a huge compliment, because I think my BS meter is really strong. And I think, it comes from years and years of...
You lose less money that way.
Yeah, I think years of watching deals, but also I think just having lived a life as a single mom and having been, you know, a woman kind of finding my own way in a business world and learning to tell the difference between people that really want to help you and those that just are not trying to help you. And so I think it's just been honed over time.
Now, I'm fascinated by another aspect of your career. You've served as an honorary captain in the Royal Canadian Navy for 10 years. Tell me about that and how that came about.
Well, as a result of being on the show, I got asked to go join the Team Canada, it was called, and go overseas to visit the troops. And so I've been there 7 times to visit the troops. I've been on the front lines of the war in Afghanistan, and I have... It literally changed my life. It changed my view of the world. It changed my view of understanding what matters in life. It was really amazing to see, you know, men and women, you know, in 50 degree heat and in the middle of deserts. You know, honestly, it was something else. But what it did is it created a patriotism and a desire to make sure that this world is protected and that everybody lives in peace and freedom. And that it changed me. And I really am grateful for that opportunity to see, you know, the sacrifices that are made in order for us to be able to live with the freedoms
sure.
that we do.
Okay, well said. You've now set up District Ventures Capital, so I suppose this is a way of maybe scaling yourself, would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's a way of, you know, as you age, you really do think a lot about legacy. You start to think about how every day really matters and you want to make sure you make the most of it. I don't like being unproductive at the best of times, but I really now at this stage of my life want to make sure I'm being productive. And so investing in entrepreneurs and helping them build their businesses is legacy to me. It helps build entrepreneurial dreams, it helps build jobs, it helps build community, it helps fuel the world. I love it. I really love it.
All right. Well, listen, it's been great to meet you. I felt we had a lot in common. We're probably the only two dragons that were fired, but maybe there's a few more.
I've never been fired.
Neither have I. I'm talking about the other ones.
Oh, fired from our jobs. Oh, yeah. Fired when I was fired when I was the first job. Yeah. You're out of here. I thought, okay, I'll go figure it out.
Well, listen, it's been a real pleasure to meet you, Arlene, and thank you for joining us. You're great.
Thank you.
Now, I should say that we did get to travel to Ottawa on our second day here. We were guests of the Irish Ambassador to Canada, John Concannon. Remarkably, myself and all the finalists, and indeed the alumni, were granted an audience with Prime Minister of Canada, Mark Carney. He spoke about Canada's place in the world, his famous Davos speech earlier this year, as well as Ireland and Canada's good relations. We didn't get to interview him or even record his talk, as it was a private event, but you can take my word for it. Mark Carney, he's one impressive individual.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr. Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.